Hello, and welcome back to the Cory Doctorow podcast. This is actually take two of my introduction. My neighbor, who's a very lovely fellow, also owns a vintage motorcycle that is very loud and takes a while to get warmed up. So periodically, well, in fact, inevitably, as I sit down to record these introductions, he comes out to his front yard, which is directly adjacent to my office, aka the garage, and he begins to warm up his motorcycle with a noise that is so loud that I feel it in my back fillings. So this is take two. I hope you're well. I am well. We are vaccinated. My daughter is half vaccinated. We are going away next weekend. So this is the last podcast you'll get from me for a couple of weeks. We're going away for my wife's 50th birthday to Avalon on Catalina Island, a trip that we can take on an open-air ferry to an island that's fully pedestrianized, where there are no cars, so we can walk around and enjoy ourselves, and in a B&B where we have good ventilation. So feeling good about that risk profile, feeling good about celebrating a big milestone for my wife, feeling good about getting out of the house. I hope you're feeling good too. I had a good writing week. I have been working on Spill, which is one of the three short stories I'm writing as commissions from the Attack Surface Kickstarter campaign. It's a little brother story about the pipeline protests and the cyber warfare elements of those. That's obviously something that's been in the news lately with the seizure of the pipeline in the Northeast, thanks to a ransomware infection. That may be an element that works its way into the story. You never know. I've also got some events coming up in June. On June the 4th, I'll be in conversation with David Dyan, author of the book Monopolized and editor of The American Prospect, and we are appearing in the Second Life Book Club. So that's right. Get yourself into the vintage virtual world, the Metaverse 1.0, and come and hear us talk. It's actually a really cool event space. I did an event for Attack Surface there at the start of the pandemic and absolutely had a fantastic time. On June the 7th, just a few days later, I'm going to be helping Terry Miles launch his debut novel, a book called Rabbits, good old conspiratorial kind of Tim Powers-ish book. And we're doing that for Book Soup here in Los Angeles, but it is also a virtual event. So last week, as you heard, I finished my complete serialization of my recent book, How to Destroy Surveillance Capitalism. John Taylor Williams, my editor, was kind enough to stitch that together for me, and I've been slowly proofing it and recording pickups and hope to have all of those pickups for him before we go away next week, and then we can start looking at strategy for launch and how you'll be able to buy that if you're interested in buying it. And it's left me with the need to find something to read to you this week. So this week, I thought I would read to you The Memex Method. Now, as I mentioned a little while ago, I have started a paid weekly column for Medium. Medium are the owners of 1-0, the folks who published How to Destroy Surveillance Capitalism, and they are paying me to write columns that are exclusive to them for 60 days, but I retain the audio rights. And Medium is subscriber-based, but it has a soft paywall, and you get a certain number of free reads every week. And I've been enjoying sitting down and thinking in a different mode to my normal blogging these days, which starts on Twitter, and instead starting with that blank Medium form, composer form, and have been really digging into it. So I've written two of those columns so far. I'm going to write a third one this week. And the first one, The Memex Method, it was a reflection on 20 years of blogging and what it's done to my writing. And the subtitle was When Your Commonplace Book is a Public Database, which gives you an idea of the flavor. So I thought I would read you this week. I don't think I'm going to read my Medium column every week, but this feels like a good place to drop this into the podcast. If you go to doctorow.medium.com, you can see all of my work. You can also read all the stuff that I post to Pluralistic there. I cross-post it, not just to Tumblr and to Mastodon and Twitter and my mailing list and my blog, but also to Medium now as well. All right then. The Memex Method from Medium by Cory Doctorow. When your commonplace book is a public database. I've been a blogger for a little more than 20 years, and in that time, I've written a little more than 20 books. Novels for adults, novels for teens, short story collections, essay collections, graphic novels for adults, high schoolers and middle schoolers, a picture book for small children, and book-length nonfiction on various subjects. I've written and delivered some hundreds of speeches as well for several kinds of technical and non-technical audience, as well as for young kids and teens. Over that same period, I published many millions of words of work in the form of blog posts. Far from competing with my serious writing time, blogging has enabled me to write an objectively large quantity of well-regarded, commercially, and critically successful prose that has made many readers happy enough that they were moved to tell me about it, and to inspire some readers to rethink their careers and lives based on how my work made them feel. There is a version of the Why Writers Should Blog story that is tawdry and mercenary. Blog, the story goes, and you will build a brand and a platform that you can use to promote your work. Virtually every sentence that contains the word brand is bullshit, and that one is no exception. A commonplace book. Writers have kept notebooks since time immemorial. The auctorial equivalent to the artist's sketchbook is the commonplace book, which can contain everything from newspaper clippings to grocery lists, to attempts to capture those inspirational bolts out of the blue. I'm sure that somewhere out there is a writer who is far more disciplined than I am, whose commonplace books are legible, carefully indexed, and comprehensive. My private notebooks are unreadable, disorganized messes, written with such appalling penmanship that it's sometimes hard to be sure that they're even written in English. Thankfully, nearly my entire writing life has been digital. My computer scientist father introduced me to my first Apple II Plus in 1979 when I was 8 years old, and I've been using digital systems to write, refine, and reference my writing ever since. I have endless running text files from the 1980s and 1990s in which I jotted notes down to myself. These are better than my actual notebooks in that they are searchable and I don't have to decipher my handwriting, but I can't really say that they generate much value for me as a writer. I couldn't tell you the last time I referred to them. They are inert, more like log files than project notes. Web log. Peter Mirholtz coined the term blog as a playful contraction of web log, like a ship's log, in which hardy adventurers upon the chaotic virtual seas could record their journeys. Though blogs have always been a broad church, there's a kind of platonic ideal of a blog that's right there in the term's etymology. The blog as an annotated browser history, like the traveler's diaries my family kept on vacations, recording which hotels we stayed in and what they were like and where we dined and what we ate and which local attractions we visited and how we felt about them. Like those family trip logs, a web log serves as more than an aide memoir, a record that can be consulted at a later date. The very act of recording your actions and impressions is itself powerfully mnemonic, fixing the moment more durably in your memory, so that it's easier to recall in the future, even if you never consult your notes. The genius of the blog was not in the note-taking, it was in the publishing. The act of making your log file public requires a rigor that keeping personal notes does not. Writing for a notional audience, particularly an audience of strangers, demands a comprehensive account that I rarely muster when I'm taking notes for myself. I am much better at kidding myself about my ability to interpret my notes at a later date than I am at convincing myself that anyone else will be able to make heads or tails of them. Writing for an audience keeps me honest. Nucleation in a supersaturated solution. If you're a writer, or an activist, or anyone else engaged in critical synthesis, then the news stories, ideas, sights, and sounds you encounter are liable to tug at your attention. This is a piece of something bigger, and maybe something important. Every day I load my giant folder of tabs, zip through my giant collection of RSS feeds, and answer my social telephones, primarily email and Twitter mentions, and I open each promising fragment in its own tab to read or think about. If the fragment seems significant, I'll blog it. I'll set out the context for why I think this seems important, and then describe what it adds to the picture. These repeated acts of public description add each idea to a supersaturated, subconscious solution of fragmentary elements that have the potential to become something bigger. Every now and again, a few of these fragments will stick to each other and nucleate, crystallizing a substantial synthetic analysis out of all those bits and pieces I've salted into that solution of potential sources of inspiration. That's how blogging is complementary to other forms of more serious work. When you've done enough of it, you can get entire essays, speeches, stories, novels spontaneously appearing in a state of near completeness, ready to be written. Be the first person to not do what no person has not done before. Clay Shirky has described the process of reading blogs as the inverse of reading traditional sources of news and opinion. In the traditional world, an editor selects, from among pitches from writers for things that might interest a readership, and then publishes the selected pieces. But for blog readers, the process is inverted. Bloggers publish everything that seems significant to them, and then the readers select which of those publications are worthy of their interests. There are advantages and disadvantages to both select then publish and publish then select, and while the latter may require more of the unrewarding work of deciding to ignore uninteresting writing, it also has more of the rewarding delight of discovering something that's both totally unexpected and utterly wonderful. That's not the only inversion that blogging entails. When it comes to my blogging method for writing longer, more synthetic work, the traditional relationship between research and writing is reversed. Traditionally, a writer identifies a subject of interest and researches it, then writes about it. In the my blogging method, the writer blogs about everything that seems interesting until a subject gels out of all those disparate short pieces. Blogging isn't just a way to organize your research. It's a way to do research for a book or essay or story or speech you don't even know you want to write yet. It's a way to discover what your future books and essays and stories and speeches will be about. Memex. In 1945's As We May Think, we encounter Vannevar Bush's thought experiment of a memory expander, a machine that serves to organize its user's thoughts and semi-automatically bring related ideas together to help the user synthesize disparate insights and facts into new, larger works. The Memex has inspired bloggers since the earliest days of the form. Dori Smith called her pioneering blog her backup brain. The Observer's longstanding tech columnist, John Naughton, has kept a blog for 19 years that he calls Memex 1.1. I called my blog my outboard brain back in 2002. Though Bush's inspired vision for a digital augmentation of human thought was missing a crucial part, publication of the notes as a spur to note-taking rigor, it nevertheless hit on a vital aspect of digital note-taking, full-text search and tag-based indexing. Though I started blogging for Boing Boing on Pyra Labs' Blogger tool, the format has always enjoyed a high degree of portability, making it easier to migrate to Six Apart's movable type and then to Automattic's WordPress. When I left Boing Boing in early 2020, it was easy to export my tens of thousands of posts spanning 19 years of writing and import them into my own private WordPress site, which I called simply Memex. Memex, combined with Pluralistic, the solo blog I started after I left Boing Boing, is a vast storehouse of nearly everything I found to be significant since 2001. When one of those nucleation events occurs, the full-text search and tag-based retrieval tools built into WordPress allow me to bring up everything I've ever written on the subject, both to refresh my memory as to the salient details and to provide webby links to expansions of related ideas. Yesterday morning, I wrote a 1,500-word essay on web blocking, free expression, copyright, and automated filtering in the space of about an hour between coffee and breakfast. The essay includes more than 20 references to articles from the past decade, some of which I wrote and some of which were written by others. It's by no means the last word I'll have on the subject. I've campaigned on this for more than a decade, but neither is it a mere repetition of what I've said before. Rather, it represents the synthesis of recent events with a long run of earlier events, interventions, scandals, and actions. Further, it represents the evolution of my ability to convey these complex and thorny ideas based on the reception earlier pieces on the same subject received. Change your priors. The availability of a deep, digital, searchable, published, and public archive of my thoughts turns habits that would otherwise be time wasters, or even harmful, into something valuable. For example, it's hard to write long and prolifically without cringing at the memory of some of your own work. After all, if the point of writing is to clarify your thinking and improve your understanding, then by definition, your older work will be more muddled. cringing at your own memories does no one any good. On the other hand, systematically reviewing your older work to find the patterns in where you got it wrong and right is hugely beneficial. It's a useful process of introspection that makes it easier to spot and avoid your own pitfalls. For more than a decade, I've revisited This Day in History from my own blogging archive, looking back 1, 5, 10 years, and eventually 15 years and 20 years. Every day, I roll back my blog archives to this day in years gone past, pull out the most interesting headlines, and publish a quick blog post linking back to them. This structured daily work of looking back on where I've been is more valuable to helping me think about where I'm going than I can say. A daily habit and a community. There's another way that blogging makes my writing better. Writing every day makes it easier to write every day. When I was a baby writer, I thought the injunction to write every day was purely aspirational, like do an hour's aerobic exercise or eat 5 helpings of vegetables. I deeply regret the years in which I waited for inspiration to strike before writing, as I regret the years when I didn't get adequate exercise or nutrition, because of all the practice I missed and the habits I waited too long to develop. And while I never set out to blog in the hopes of building a platform, or worse still, a brand, the act of publishing my own interests helped people with similar interests to mine to find me, and vice versa. Some of those people buy my books, and vice versa, but far more importantly, they are a community. This is the final inversion of blogging. Not just publishing before selecting, nor researching before knowing your subject, but producing to attract, rather than serve, your audience. Traditional editors identify an audience who will pay for their publication, or whom an advertiser will pay to reach, and then find a writer who can speak to that audience. As a blogger, I've enjoyed the delirious freedom to write exactly the publication I'd want to read, which then attracts other people who feel the same way. 2 decades in, I can safely say that this community of peers, mentors, sounding boards, protégés, friends, combatants, and interlocutors is more useful to me as a writer and a person than even the prodigious instrumental benefits that blogging brings to my composition process. All right, then, I will talk to you in a couple of weeks. I hope you have a good fortnight. I hope you are getting vaccinated. I hope you are safe. Talk to you later. You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ours, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.